That lines Iran's foreign minister says that Tehran will spare no effort to help Lebanon amid the Arab country's ongoing economic crisis. At least 20 people are killed and nearly 300 others injured in an earthquake that hit Pakistan's southwestern Balochistan province. And also, the World Health Organization approves the use of the world's first vaccine against malaria, the mosquito-borne disease that kills about 500,000 people a year. Hello and welcome, everybody. Here in the Iranian capital, Tehran, this is World News. Our top story for this half hour: Iran's foreign minister says the Islamic Republic supports Lebanon's independent sovereignty and territorial integrity. Hossein Amir Abdollahian made the comment in a meeting with the Lebanese president in Beirut, Michel Aoun, for his part, said Lebanon supports efforts aimed at creating convergence among regional countries. The top Iranian diplomat is in Beirut on the second leg of his trip to regional countries. Upon his arrival in Beirut, Amir Abdollahian said Tehran will spare no effort to help Lebanon amid an ongoing economic crisis facing the Mediterranean nation. Earlier, he held talks with top Russian officials in Moscow. We're now joined by satellite by our correspondent Mariam Saleh, who's with us from the Lebanese capital, Beirut. Mariam, welcome to the program. Talk to us more about the significance of the Iranian foreign minister's visit to the Lebanese capital, and also what's on the schedule of his trip.
After meeting with President Michel Aoun, he came to the residence of the Lebanese Parliament Speaker, Nabih Berri. He is currently meeting with the Speaker, and of course, ties between Iran and Speaker Nabih Berri go a long way back. He has, of course, personal relations and personal ties with all officials in the Islamic Republic of Iran. The foreign minister, despite the fact that before Mr. Abdollahian was not perhaps foreign minister, but he has met with Parliament Speaker Nabih Berri before. After meeting with the Speaker, he will be going to meet with Prime Minister Najib Mikati. That will be a very interesting meeting, I believe. After the meetings with the top officials, later on today, Iranian foreign minister will be meeting with the Palestinian factions, mostly basically the representatives of the factions that have resistance, of course, in Palestine. That is a very significant meeting that is considered to be a traditional meeting for all Iranian foreign ministers who come to Lebanon. They always meet with the representatives of the Palestinian factions because Iran has, of course, considered very significantly the ties with the Palestinian factions, especially through those that are present in Lebanon and Syria. When we're talking about the significance, there are so many issues that play out here. We're talking about significance when it comes to the relations between Iran and Lebanon, but also the relations between Iran and the entire Arab world, and especially since this comes after a meeting after a visit to Russia. We can see how there is, of course, a growing alliance between the resistance factions and those countries and those states that are very much supportive of the resistance bloc in the entire region, one of which is Russia. There seems to be a growing power from that part. And, of course, coming here to meet with the Lebanese and show once more, as we saw and heard in his statements, that once more Iran will extend its wish to assist Lebanon at a time where Lebanon needs it most. And we can, of course, go back to these statements. They have been the same statements for Iran for decades. We've heard back in 2000, then after the assistance that was given to Lebanon after the 2006 war with the rebuilding process after the Israeli invasion. Also, we had in 2012 from the Iranian ambassador and Iranian foreign minister then also proposed that they are willing to build an entire power station for Lebanon to completely and once and for all solve the electricity crisis in Lebanon. Unfortunately, there was so much pressure being put into that, especially U.S. pressure from the U.S. embassy here in Beirut, which stopped at all of those initiatives and did not allow these issues to go and continue. Of course, we talk about the support for Iran. We talk mainly about support for the resistance and for Hezbollah. We are expecting to see a meeting for Mr. Foreign Minister and Hezbollah Secretary General Sayed Hassan Nasrallah. That is usually not uncovered to the media. We only know about it after it is, of course, conducted. After they do meet, we will have the footage. We're not sure if this will occur tonight or tomorrow. We are waiting for that as well. Of course, there are a statement from the Lebanese officials saying that they are welcoming Iran's initiatives. However, with the current government now and its talks with the International Monetary Fund and the continuous ties that there are and the influence that there is for the U.S. Embassy here in Lebanon, I don't think we will see a lot of steps being taken by the Lebanese government in order to bring in that Iranian assistance. We are seeing it through non-governmental initiative, Hezbollah's initiative, bringing in Iranian fuel to Lebanon to ease some of the suffering of Lebanese people, to basically fill in some of the gap which the Lebanese government has failed to do. That is on one side. We have also issues related to assistance to the Lebanese army, which is, of course, lacking so much support. We only have very minimal support for the Lebanese army, which is considered one of the weakest armies in the region, if we may say, incapable, basically, of defending Lebanon from a full-scale invasion of Lebanon, but basically just supporting the Lebanese resistance, supporting as well the army in its fight against Israeli invasion, Israeli threats. So basically, we are waiting now to see if there will be a statement given by Mr. Foreign Minister Amir Abdullahian after he meets with the speaker, and to see what has come out from these talks with the Lebanese officials, and see if there will be any sort of agreements that will be signed when it comes to assisting Lebanon economically or financially. And one thing to mention, which is very significant, that Iran has stressed that in any assistance, it is willing to allow Lebanon to pay in the local currency, which will be very much significant for Lebanon and would save the country plenty of money.
All right, thanks a lot to Mariam Saleh joining us from the Lebanese capital, Beirut. Elsewhere, Iran's ambassador to the United Nations, says that Tehran will remain committed to the 2015 Iran nuclear deal as long as other signatories to the accord keep their side of the bargain. Majid Takht Ravanchi also called for the removal of sanctions against Iran in a quick and verifiable way. He criticized the noncompliance of some of the parties of the deal, saying, "The undeniable truth is that the United States and the Europeans have not fulfilled their commitments. Iran and the remaining signatories to the agreement have tried to salvage the deal since the U.S. withdrew from it and reimposed sanctions on Iran in 2018. Iran's nuclear negotiations, although on life support, will continue even though they've been stalled. Iran's stance has not changed. The lifting of sanctions and the return to the JCPOA agreement, nothing more, nothing less. The U.S., however, based on how Iran sees it, is not sending positive signals, like rejecting Iran's call for the unfreezing of about $10 billion of its money.
Iran has said the United States must effectively remove all 800 illegal sanctions imposed, reimposed, or relabeled under former President Donald Trump. Tehran says such a measure serves as a ticket for Washington to return to the negotiating table. Iran's foreign ministry spokesman, Saeed Khatibzadeh, said the Islamic Republic would definitely resume negotiations with the P4 plus one group of countries, including Britain, France, Russia, and China plus Germany in the Austrian capital, Vienna. However, he added, Tehran is still reviewing the details of the six rounds of Vienna talks held under the previous Iranian administration. Khatibzadeh said Iran's new administration is currently trying to, quote, find out why the previous talks did not reach a satisfactory phase or a document that all sides will be happy with. He said Tehran is trying to find out the issues that need to be addressed properly in the upcoming talks. The Iranian official said the U.S. is required to remove all the sanctions imposed, reimposed, or relabeled by Trump and ensure that Washington will no longer violate the JCPOA. Khatibzadeh also added the new U.S. administration has not changed its policy towards Iran. The sanctions imposed by the Trump administration are in place right now, and we have not seen any meaningful or great change in their policy towards Iran.
As Richard Haass, the head of CFR, has just recently published in Foreign Affairs, There is no difference in practice in foreign policy of President Biden or President Trump. All of them are doing the same thing when it is more serious, so it's beyond the wordplay that each plays. So the point is that the Americans need to realize that they need to be more practical and they need to be more serious about the negotiations.
Hadibzadeh made the remarks amid a pause in Vienna talks between Iranian and P4 plus one delegations on a potential revival of the JCPOA.
Iran has said that the U.S. needs to remove all 800 sanctions imposed after President Trump unilaterally withdrew from the 2015 nuclear deal. Iran has also said the U.S. is required to remove all the sanctions imposed, reimposed, or relabeled by Trump and ensure that Washington will no longer violate the JCPOA.
In September, Iran's foreign minister, Hossein Amir Abdollahian, slammed the U.S.'s lack of commitment and Europe's inaction regarding the 2015 Iran nuclear deal, saying the Islamic Republic is ready for result-oriented talks on the agreement's revival that would secure people's rights and interests. Former U.S. President Donald Trump pulled out of the JCPOA in May 2018 and reimposed the anti-Iran sanctions that the deal had lifted. He also placed additional sanctions on Iran under other pretexts not related to the nuclear case as part of the so-called maximum pressure campaign. Following a year of strategic patience, Iran resorted to its legal rights stipulated in Article 26 of the JCPOA, which grants a party the right to suspend its contractual commitments in case of non-compliance by other signatories and let go of some of the restrictions imposed on its nuclear energy program. Meanwhile, the new U.S. administration under President Biden says it wants to compensate for Trump's mistake and rejoin the deal, but it is showing an overriding tendency for maintaining some of the sanctions as a tool of pressure.
So if they want Iran to be back to the table, if they want Iran to to be ready to accept the limitations of the JCPOA, they should actually, the Americans and the Europeans, need to realize that they need to meet their own obligations as well. So Iran is actually entitled to benefit economically from the JCPOA, and
Tehran insists that all sanctions should first be removed in a verifiable manner before the Islamic Republic reverses its counteractive measures. Meanwhile, a high-level Israeli delegation has visited the U.S. over the Iran nuclear deal. The Israeli team has requested that the United States formulate a backup plan in case Iran does not return to talks. Israel has reportedly called on Americans to levy significant and painful sanctions on Iran if it does not sign the deal. Top U.S. officials have also told Israelis that Washington would pursue other venues if diplomacy fails.
At least 20 people have been killed in an earthquake that rocked Pakistan's southwestern Balochistan province. Most of the victims died after roofs and walls collapsed as they were asleep. Nearly 300 others have also been injured. Pakistan's disaster management officials say the toll may increase. According to the U.S. Geographical Survey, the tremor was 5.7 magnitude. It struck at about 3 a.m. local time at a depth of about 20 kilometers. The quake was felt in the provincial capital Quetta and other cities in Balochistan. The World Health Organization has endorsed the use of the world's first and only approved malaria vaccine for children, calling it a breakthrough.
Today, WHO is recommending the broad use of the world's first malaria vaccine. This recommendation is based on results from an ongoing pilot program in Ghana, Kenya, and Malawi that has reached more than 800,000 children since 2019. This long-awaited malaria vaccine is a breakthrough for science, child health, and malaria control.
The WHO says the vaccine developed by British drug maker GlaxoSmithKline should be widely given to African children at risk. The endorsement of the RTSS or Mosquirix vaccine, follows a decade of clinical trials in seven African countries. Since 2019, some 2.3 million doses have been administered to infants in Ghana, Kenya, and Malawi. According to the UN Health Agency, 94% of malaria cases and deaths occur in Africa. It is deadlier than COVID-19 on the continent and claimed 386,000 lives in 2019 compared to 212,000 coronavirus deaths in the past 18 months there. The mosquito-borne disease kills about 500,000 people worldwide every year. NATO has expelled 8 Russian representatives to the Western Military Alliance, accusing them of being, quote, undeclared intelligence officers. A NATO official has been quoted as saying that the alliance also announced it would reduce members of Russia's mission to the Brussels-based body to 10. He stressed that the move is aimed at strengthening the alliance's deterrence in response to, quote, Russia's aggressive actions. A senior Russian diplomat has said his country will retaliate against the NATO's move. The Russian diplomats have reportedly been asked to leave by the end of the month. A British news network said NATO members decided on the expulsion after reviewing suspected Russian malign activities. Over the summer, Moscow has always denied any wrongdoing. France says its dispute over a recent security pact between the U.S. and Australia that led Canberra to ditch a submarine deal with Paris remains serious and unresolved. Foreign Minister Jean-Yves Le Drian said the resumption of dialogue between the two countries doesn't mean the crisis is resolved. Le Drian stressed that the U.S. needs to show actions, not words, to get out of the situation. He made the remarks despite acknowledging substantive talks with his U.S. counterpart in Paris. The presidents of the two countries were also set to meet next week. The transatlantic row was triggered after the U.S. and the U.K. inked a deal with Australia known as AUKUS to provide it with technology and means to build nuclear-powered submarines. Later, Canberra announced the cancellation of a multi-billion dollar submarine deal with Paris. And that brings us to an end here on this edition of the World News. Do stay tuned, though. Bye.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight. given that the Biden administration has continued the Trump administration policy of closing the traditional route of asking for asylum at ports of entry, asylum seekers took to the river, setting the stage for compelling video footage of large groups of immigrants turning themselves in at the border fence in Del Rio. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by Michelle Garcia, reporter. This article is published under the heading, U.S. Border Authorities Failed to Prepare for Influx of Migrants Despite Weeks of Warnings. Stay tuned for more. By the time word spread that up to 15,000 mostly Haitian migrants had been detained under the international bridge in Del Rio, the small Texas border town had become occupied territory. A helicopter hovered over the Rio Grande. State troopers swarmed everywhere and were stationed every half mile along the surrounding roads. A tense city of military and law enforcement personnel had sprouted up on city-owned land on the south side of the border wall, near the makeshift camp where the Haitians slept. Inside the camp, in the dirt and the heat, pregnant women went into labor. 4 years ago, Republicans and Democrats linked arms with residents from both sides of the border to form a human chain across the bridge in show of unity. Yet, in recent weeks, Del Rio has become a theater for a dramatic show of violence and force as mounted border patrol agents charged at Haitian migrants while twirling their reins like whips. Some 2,300 law enforcement officers said Mayor Bruno Lozano had been dispatched to Val Verde County, home to roughly 49,000 residents. One of the residents said, "I don't feel it's in anybody's best interest to come in mass movement like that," adding that it creates security vulnerabilities elsewhere. "If this is going to continue to be our response, it's not a good precedent." Outside a shelter operated by Val Verde Humanitarian Border Coalition, a local man carrying a holstered firearm said he was providing security to protect Haitians from hostile residents and outsiders. When Al Sharpton attempted to hold a media event near the border wall in solidarity with the Haitian migrants, he was shouted down by men who accused him of spreading racism. Volunteers in Del Rio collected donations and set out refreshments and snacks for state troopers. Overwhelmed was the word repeatedly used by federal, state, and local officials to describe border patrol agents who officials said were caught by surprise and unable to address the influx of Haitian migrants. But the arrival of Haitians was anticipated, and much of the chaos that ensued seemed preventable with basic planning and logistics. But in the scramble to contain the media crisis, the U.S. employed tactics that set off a cascade of repression and violence on both sides of the border. By allowing the situation to reach critical levels, federal officials created conditions that made a militarized crackdown seem inevitable, making criminals out of people, asserting that the right to seek asylum. Almost 30,000 migrants, mostly Haitians, were encountered in Del Rio after September 9th, said Secretary of Homeland Security Alejandro Mayorkas in a briefing, and more than 12,000 will have their cases heard by an immigration judge. But more than 5,000 of those asylum seekers have been deported to Haiti just weeks after the U.S. extended and expanded temporary protected status of the country. As Mayorkas stated in May, Haiti is currently experiencing serious security concerns, social unrest, an increase in human rights abuses, crippling poverty, and lack of basic resources, which are exacerbated by the COVID-19 pandemic. Wade McMullen, an attorney at RFK Human Rights, who traveled to Del Rio, said, "The arrival of vulnerable asylum seekers is not a crisis. The militarized response and lack of preparation, that's the crisis." Days after Border Patrol agents on horseback charged at Haitian migrants, Texas Governor Greg Abbott made full request of the mayor to authorize state troopers to enter the city property to arrest the Haitian for criminal transgressing. A spokesperson for Abbott did not answer questions about the governor's request to conduct the arrest. After a massive deployment involving the Coast Guard, Texas National Guard, state troopers including air and marine support, and Customs and Border Protection, on September 24th, officials announced that Haitians were no longer under the bridge. After weeks of a growing encampment and worsening conditions, everyone had been cleared out in mere days. The aggressive response in Del Rio underscores an immigration system that prioritizes the spectacle of force over an investment in the construction of systems needed to process asylum seekers to conform to obligations dictated by international and U.S. law. Officials left little doubt that what the aggressive deployment was designed to send a message of deterrence to others who might also seek asylum. What we start doing to Haitians tends to spill over to everyone else, said Yael Schacher, an immigration historian and senior advocate with Refugees International. In the 1980s, after the U.S. had experimented with imposing detention on Haitians, the policy was expanded to Central Americans fleeing U.S.-backed wars. County Judge Louis Owens, the top administrator of Val Verde County, described the state and federal law enforcement deployment as amazing. He said, "We want to lean on law enforcement to stop the flow." That said, there has to be a process to ask for asylum. Despite claims that border officials were caught off guard, signs of the impending arrival of a large number of asylum seekers were not hard to find. In the Del Rio area, the number of encounters with migrants had increased in 2021 over the prior year, with the numbers spiking over 1,000% by May, according to Customs and Border Protection data. In May, Lozano, a Democrat, met with congressional Republicans and appeared on Fox News complaining about illegals in Townsend, criticizing the Biden administration for a lack of response at the border. He said, "Unfortunately, at the time, it was only right-wing media groups like Fox News that were telling the story," adding that the policy needs to be reformed so ports of entry have to take them in legally and not be criminally charged. 2 months later, Border Patrol agents detained hundreds of people from various countries under the bridge in Del Rio. Meanwhile, a video that captured Mexican immigration officials brutalizing Haitian migrants who were headed north circulated online. The Spanish newspaper El País reported that Haitian claims for asylum in Mexico had reached a record high. By September, Mexico had received 19,000 petitions for asylum, higher than any other nationality, following a trend of Haitians transiting through Mexico that began 2 years ago. Even so, the United States officials repeatedly claimed that the arrival of Haitians on the border was a surprise. Given that the Biden administration has continued the Trump administration policy of closing the traditional route of asking for asylum at ports of entry, asylum seekers took to the river, setting the stage for compelling video footage of large groups of immigrants turning themselves in at the border fence in Del Rio, exciting viewers of Fox and Newsmax. In early August, George Ventura, a contributor to the right-wing Daily Caller, interviewed Del Rio residents about the crisis. Around this time, said Owens, the Judge County authorities were informed that caravans of some 25,000 people were expected to arrive on the border.
Joining us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello, welcome to The Spotlight. I'm Kavit Afwai. When it comes to the Caucasus, Iran has made its stance clear. The Islamic Republic of Iran is deeply concerned by Israel's presence in this region and will not accept a map change. Iran's foreign minister made the remarks in the presence of his Russian counterpart, Sergei Lavrov, in Moscow. Meanwhile, Iran's leader has also said that the interference of foreign actors in the region is a source of discord and damage, calling on regional states to follow the example of Iran for power and rationality. Stay tuned to The Spotlight.
Israel's divisive activities in the region have always been a matter of concern for Iran, given the regime's hostility towards the Islamic Republic over the past decades. Recently, such concerns have grown further amid Israel's ever-expanding military ties with Azerbaijan. Israel has turned into a major arms supplier to the Caucasus nation in the wake of last year's flare-up of tensions between Azerbaijan and Armenia over the Nagorno-Karabakh region. Iran sees Israel's nexus and arms deal with Baku as an attempt to establish a presence in the South Caucasus, which Tehran says will undermine regional stability and security. Iranian officials, including President Ibrahim Raisi, have warned that Tehran does not tolerate the regime's military presence in the region. Such a stance was among major topics highlighted by Iran's top diplomat during his visit to Russia.
We certainly never accept any geopolitical change and map change in the Caucasus. We have serious concerns about the presence of terrorists and Zionists in the region.
Last week, the Iranian armed forces launched a massive drill near the border with Azerbaijan to boost the country's defense and deterrent capabilities in the face of potential enemy threats. Military officials said the exercise was also a warning to Israel, a message that has been echoed by experts.
This latest exercise is very significant because it's sending out a clear message that Iran is not going to be passive. They're going to proactively be hunting and seeking out any forces which are trying to violate the stability of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Such warnings stem from Israel's hostile approaches, which include the assassination of Iranian nuclear scientists and attacks on the country's nuclear facilities. Besides, Israeli officials have time and again threatened Iran with military action, a move Iran says will be met with a crushing response.
Our guest joining us for the Spotlight is Said Mohsen Abbas. He's a journalist and political commentator who joins us from London. Also joining us, Said Mustafa Khoshchesh, political analyst. I'd like to welcome you both. Let me first start with you, Said Mustafa Khoshchesh, and if you can quickly rewind back to a week ago where it seems that's a point where you had these military drills that were held by Iran in the northwestern border area. Tell us why Iran did that and what that situation is in the Caucasus that is a matter of concern at this point.
Hello, Kaveh, and thanks for having me. Well, you know, it all started last year. We hoped that, you know, Azerbaijan would suffice to take him back Karabakh. But in a final deal, it was mentioned that there would be an exchange of corridors for Armenia and also Azerbaijan in southern Armenia. They would be given an economic corridor in order to be connected to their Nakhchivan region. But gradually they were provoked by Israel, that's looking very much, as your report said, for escalating tensions between Iran and its neighbors as part of its plot against Iran to weaken Iran, to open up a corridor, to capture and occupy southern Armenian territory in order to be linked to Nakhchivan and then to Turkey. And then, this is also pursued by the neo-Ottoman ambitious plans of Mr. Erdogan to open up such a corridor to go through Azerbaijan to the Caspian Sea, and then from there to Kyrgyzstan, Uzbekistan, to Western China. There are Turkish territories. Different kinds of ethnic Turks live in there. So they meant to open up such a territory. That would inflict much harm to Iran's not only national trade with Armenia or its link to, to the Eurasian territories and countries and Europe, but also to the transit, the international corridor, south-north corridor that starts outside Iran, southeast Iran, and goes through Iran to Armenia, to Eurasia, Russia, and Europe. And if such occupation happens, then Iran would have no border with Armenia, and then it's not just economic losses, huge economic losses that would be inflicted on Iran due to the rivalries, regional rivalries, that those who would occupy this territory would have with Iran, but also it would inflict a very huge geopolitical risks and threats to Iran, and it's not just Iran, but also to other regional states. Mm-hmm. Even Russians have a lot to lose if such a thing happens. So Iranians have been very much serious about standing against any such ambitious plan to capture Armenia, mm-hmm. southern Armenia, the same way that Iranians were serious about taking back Karabakh, helping Azerbaijan take back its occupied Karabakh territory.
Well, let's see here. So, Simonson Abbas, you have the explanation there given by Sayyid Mostafa Khoshesh, and then you had Iran hold military drills, of which then it came out and said, and this is going back to the Iranian foreign minister, quote, "The Islamic Republic of Iran does not tolerate the presence and activities of the Zionist regime against its national security and will take any necessary action in this regard." So then you had this come out, and it took some by surprise. If you can explain to us why Iran has made this statement, what is going on there?
Well, what the Iranian intelligence clearly has picked up quite some time ago is that after the Nagorno-Karabakh victory, essentially, for Azerbaijan, what they began to do was to allow Zionist Israeli contractors, Israeli companies, to become involved in the reconstruction of the regions that were won during this clash between the Azerbaijanis and the Armenians. Now, that is going to be an absolute red line. Everybody would know that. And the fact of the matter already is that Israeli drones are being stationed in that territory. And it's also alleged that, even more seriously, that a recent attack, a terrorist attack, on a northern installation, nuclear installation within Iran, it's being intimated that actually it could well be such territorial, if you like, gifts which Azerbaijan is giving to its Israeli collaborators, which could be causing major problems already in terms of Islamic Republic of Iran's internal security. Of course, all these things need to be verified, and there are claims and counterclaims going on. What is a fact, though, is that Azerbaijan gets 60% of its military hardware and its arms from Israel. What is a fact is that the Azeris provide 40% of Israel's oil, supplies. There are many, many more economic ties which are there. The Azeris, by and large, have tried to keep this very much undercover up to now. They've not really openly declared their love affair with Israel. But you see, of course, Iran cannot ignore such a major, if you like, threat to its strategic safety, if you like, geostrategic safety, as to allow not only the Zionists into that territory, but also what's being alleged and is very, very likely to be true, is that the forces hitherto operating, for instance, in Syria, in Idlib, now have a direct rat run from Turkey into this region of Nagorno-Karabakh, and that, of course, means that ISIS and their sort of offshoots can embed themselves on the northern borders of Iran too. And this, of course, is yet another major threat. And I think this is why Ayatollah Khamenei, I mean, I'm going to quote, he says, those who dare under illusions of relying on others, thinking that they can provide their security, should know that they will soon receive a slap, that they will regret this. Now, that's really tough talk from the leader himself. And I think in retaliation, one of the things that we hear is that a mosque, a Husseinia in Baku, has been closed down. The Azerbaijanis now claim it's because of the coronavirus, but the office of the Ayatollah Khamenei was also evidently shut down. So there are these exchanges going on. Iran itself has shut down military airspace for Azerbaijani military aircraft across its kind of airspace. So there is a sort of a very serious amount of, if you like, warning and saber rattling going on from Iran, saying, look, there are huge red lines, and Mr. Ilham Aliyev, the president of Azerbaijan, needs to take serious note.
Yeah, and when you talk about Iran's leader there and the statement that he made, say, Mohsen Abbas, let me ask you, Mostafa Khoshchesh, Iran's leader has been very careful in the way that he's addressed this issue, and I'm going to take another quote where he said, the interference of foreigners in the region is a source of discord and damage. All issues and incidents must be resolved without foreign interference, and the countries of the region should follow the example of Iran and the armed forces of the Islamic Republic. I'm guessing your interpretation, obviously, of Iran's leader's statement there, but I'm guessing that Iran's motto of wanting to establish and maintaining friendly relations with the countries in the region has something to do with that. And, of course, the exercises is one of the reasons why it was held, is to make sure that it maintains stability there.
That's exactly true. Iran has never invaded any country, and its war games are always meant, and even its arms program, they are meant to deter threats. And when the Iranian leader said that, he meant the growing ties that Azerbaijan has been having with Israel, as your other guest correctly mentioned. There are three issues here involved. First was the corridor that I just explained. Again, on both sides, on Azerbaijan side and Turkey side, you could see the foot trace of the Israeli regime provoking and inciting the two governments to go for such an ambitious plan. That would be a strategic mistake, of course. Iran, the drills show that Iran, you know, would take any such move very seriously and would step in, though war would be a last resort, and you know, Iran has multiple more options, yet still, if nothing works, then Iran would take immediate action. One of such options was offering Armenia to, you know, construct a new corridor that would start from Iranian borders to Yerevan for 400 kilometers. The only, you know, the first 20 kilometers of the old road that would go to the newly freed Karabakh region matters here, and Iran has offered to construct a replacement road and highway, and it's already involved in that. That means that Iran is very serious, that's sending Azerbaijan a serious message, that Iran would have no hesitation to defend its interests in the region. Also, the militant groups deployed in Idlib in northwestern Syria, they've been transitioned to Karabakh region, and that's a very serious threat to Iran. And also, the Israelis have been given a very free hand recently, especially in the last few years, growingly. I mean, the Azeris have given the Israelis an airbase, and they have been using, the Israelis have been using that base for as a platform to do hostile actions against Iran. They've been sending multiple drones to Iran. In many cases, they have been pushed back. They've, you know, failed in infiltrating Iranian skies. But in one, at least in one or two cases, they infiltrated Iranian territory. Though the Iranian air defense was in the know, they had, you know, found out that that drone was coming in. They wanted to know where it's going and what's the mission, and it was shut down. It was a Hermes, Israeli Hermes drone that was sent by the Israelis to go for reconnaissance mission against Natanz. And when Iran held, protested against such a move to Azerbaijan, the Baku government claimed that they didn't know anything about it, that the Israelis had bypassed them. That means giving Israel a free hand, such a free hand that they would not even, be bound to inform the Baku government. And also, many victims had infiltrated the Azerbaijan border with Iran. That's a very serious crime against the against Iran. In one or two cases, they have assassinated Iranian scientists. Let me give you this last example.
Okay.
Majid Jamal Faisi, who was involved in an assassination of an Iranian nuclear scientist around a decade ago, he had been given a free pass to go to Israel via Azerbaijan and for receiving training, and he got back to do the assassination, and he did it, and he martyred one of the Iranian nuclear scientists. So Iran has had many grievances. It has, you know, exhausted diplomatic, and it's now sending very serious, warnings to the Baku government that enough is enough, because Baku is going to give the Israelis more, room, and at least they would allow them to have two, three new military bases that would definitely be used against Iran. And there is irrefutable evidence that Baku has been inviting Israeli war strategists like Brenda Schaffer, who's a Haifa University teacher and Israeli army strategist and FDD member, who is the theoretician of radicalizing ethnic Azeri nationality in order to decompose Iran.
Yeah,
that's a very, you know, she even released a picture of her presence on the other side of Khoda Afarin Bridge on Aras River, the border river between Iran and Azerbaijan, very proudly. She declared her presence in there.
And to give more backing to what Mustafa Khoshesh has said there, Sayyid Mohsen Abbas, the Azerbaijani Defense Ministry has said that it's denied allowing another entity, in this case Israel, or even the U.S. to use this airspace. And there was information, I guess, about Russia's container radar system that detected unknown planes using Azerbaijan's airspace. Again, the Azerbaijani Defense Minister denying that. How could that be when that seems to be the case?
Well, the Azeris clearly have tested the water. They've got bold after the victory, the quite comprehensive victory, actually, and the military hardware that they used was extremely and extraordinarily accurate and powerful. Now, Turkey was involved in the supply of those weapons, Israel itself, of course, as I said. So it could be that Mr. Aliyev has got delusions beyond his station and feels that he might be able to stake a claim in certain areas within Iran. But I rather suspect it's much more a case of the issue of the corridors and all these pipelines, these railway tracks. All of this links ultimately, let's not forget, to the Belt Road Initiative, which is the major lifeline, the major economic, lifeline for countries in that region. Now, Azerbaijan sits very critically at a very critical nexus or juncture of that Belt Road Initiative. And of course, the Americans, the Israelis, and such like forces wouldn't want that to be successful, especially if it involved the Islamic Republic of Iran benefiting at all. And of course, this is the crux of the issue. The Russia-China sort of strategic partnership, along with Iran and other nations, Pakistan included within that, They look for stability within this region. All of them will want stability. They'll be looking on at this situation with horror, because essentially this would give NATO and would give NATO's partners the perfect opportunity to put a spanner in the works of that part of the development, the economic development of that region. They would like nothing more than to be able to do that. So I think we're going to see a lot of behind-the-scenes involvement from the greater Eurasian partnership, as it were, to step in and to try and ensure that Azerbaijan doesn't go any further, and the legitimate concerns that the Islamic Republic of Iran has shown will be given great credence within that part of the world. And the economic factors, I think, will hopefully allow Azerbaijan to see sense, because they would profit from a sort of an equitable use of the corridors around Nakhchivan and the various railway routes.
All right, final question quickly, if you can, say Mustafa Hoshesh. So you would guess that here logic needs to prevail. One step should be taken back, tensions to be simmered down. But that would be very hard, given some of the facts that you have said about how, as you said, Azerbaijan being used as a base, even though the country's president and even the defense ministry says that's not the case. When will that red line be crossed, or will things get toned down? How will they get toned down, in your opinion?
Any further activity by the militants, any lack of action by Azerbaijan to take the militants back, to take the Israelis back, and any further hostile activity by Israeli regime against Iran through the Azeri territory, or any kind of effort by Azerbaijan and its allies to change geopolitical borders would trigger Iran's reaction, definitely very tough and stern reaction. Let's remember that this kind of corridor, we are not talking about an economic corridor that would be welcomed by anyone, by everyone, but we are talking about occupation of territory. If that happens, and they've coined a word for that, Turkestan, then that means Turkey would find itself on the shores of the Caspian Sea. Turkey is a NATO ally. That means the expansion and spread of NATO to territories, not just threatening Iran, but also Russians. And we all know what the Russian reaction could be to the spread and expansion of NATO. We saw it in their reaction to such efforts in Ukraine. And also the presence of militants is mainly a threat to Russia. That's why when Iran's martyred Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani convinced Putin that after establishing their presence in Syria and Iraq, that these militant groups, they would spread to Russian territories to pose threat to them, Putin was convinced to authorize military action against the militants in Syria. And then they know it pretty well. Though they are in good terms with Israel, the Russians know pretty well what kind of plans are being pursued by the Israelis to make hotbed of tensions around Iran. And this means Iran's top reaction. This means escalation of tensions and instability in the region that would be harmful to everyone, including Russia.
Thank you very much. Unfortunately, we're fresh out of time. Thank you for your comments, Sayyid Mustafa Hoshesh, political analyst. And Sayyid Mohsin Abbas, thank you, journalist and political commentator there from London. And with that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. From Mika Vitale and entire team, it's goodbye until next time.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
يبنى الحسن يبنى الحسن أجرك الله في مصيبة جدك علي ابن موسى.
Heaven in grief.
In the name of God, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Dear listeners, welcome to the program Heaven in Grief. We express our condolences for the martyrdom of Imam Ar-Ridha alayhi salam. And today we're going to talk about Imam Ar-Ridha alayhi salam with the presence of Dr. Abbas Ali Shamli. Welcome to the program and assalamu alaikum.
Alaykum assalam wa rahmatullah. My salams to yourself, Mr. Namazi, and all brothers and sisters in faith while listening to this program.
Thank you. Dr. Shamli, the word Raza, which is specific for Imam Ar-Ridha alayhi salam, has a lot of meanings.
Yeah.
I think there's a hadith from the Prophet which explains what Raza means. Would you elaborate on that hadith, please?
Inshallah. Thank you very much. I also myself, I express my condolences for the sad occasion of martyrdom of Imam Ali ibn Musa Ar-Ridha al-Murtada, Sultan al-Ard, our beloved eighth Imam for all Shia Imamis all over the world. Imam is entitled with this very great title, Ar-Ridha. Ar-Ridha in the Arabic terminology means satisfaction. When you are satisfied with something, with yourself, with life, with your parents, with your job, with your future, you are Radi, satisfied. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in the Holy Quran in different verses explains, reveals that good faithful people come to this high level of dedication which is called position of satisfaction. Radiallahu anhum wa radu anhu. Satisfaction is a mutual relationship between us and Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. The position of Rida means you are happy and satisfied with what happens in your life. Of course, we need to be very careful not to attribute the result of our shortcomings and our faults to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
Yeah.
Sometimes we go by chance, we go by sudden, we go without any planning, without having program. Plan and program are two keys for success, for happiness, for satisfaction. So, number one, we need to be careful to use our ability cognitively, emotionally, and to consult with the people who are expert in different fields for the jobs, for the affairs, for the issues that we are dealing with. This is number one. But when you do your best, you have your planning, you have your program, you have your process of conduction, but sometimes you do not arrive at the purpose, at the target that you predicted. Don't worry. It's not the end of life. Life is providing you lessons. You realize that you made a mistake. You need to change the way. You need to change your mind. Okay? But satisfaction in terms of Imam Ali ibn Musa salawatullahi wa salamu alayhi is a mystical, religious understanding. The position of satisfaction is the highest level of dedication before Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Radiallahu anhum wa radu anhu. Some people come to a point, come to a position that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is happy with them. They are obedient. Wa radu anhu. And these people are also are happy with what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala brings in their life. Imam Abu Abdullah al-Hussein salawatullahi wa salamu alayhi, in different steps of his movement in Karbala, was providing this fact, this principle. Ridha Allah, ridhana ahl al-bayt. Satisfaction of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is the scale, is the criterion for us. All movements